This is the Regular Average Guy podcast, and this week we are going to talk about celebrity political opinions. So, on this episode, we are going to talk about celebrity political opinions. Something that's changed over the years, as we have a celebrity currently holding the highest office of the United States. People want to discount the opinions of celebrities, which I think is fascinating. In particular, musicians, which maybe I'm partial because I am a musician, or I consider myself a musician, or what have you. But the opinion of a lot of regular average people is that, well, what do these celebrities know? They don't know what they're talking about. They live in their multi-million dollar mansions, you know, their world, blah, 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 all that bullshit, right? But somehow, a guy who's lived in rural Arkansas his entire life has a better grasp on the geopolitical spectrum than a celebrity who's toured the world several times over. This really kind of dawned on me because I was scrolling through Facebook and came upon a post. Many of you may know who this guy is, many may not, but Todd Rundgren. He was a fairly big star in the 70s, and if you're a musician, you know, he's one of the top songwriters of that era, not only with his own work, but work he did for other people, production he did for other people. If you're a music nerd, then Todd Rundgren is most certainly on your dial. But I digress. I was looking through Facebook, and I came along some sort of post that had Todd Rundgren, and I was advertising for a concert or what have you, but for whatever reason, I decided to look at the comments. And all of the comments, I shouldn't say all, nearly all of the comments were something to the effect of, oh my God, I love your music, but shut up. You know, keep playing your music, but shut up. I don't want to hear your political opinions. Which I can understand to an extent. But as I said a moment ago, a lot of these people have toured the world several times over, if not dozens to hundreds of times throughout their lives. They've seen parts of this world that most people only see on TV or read about. So, call me crazy, but I think a lot of these people have a better perspective on what's going on, not only in other countries, but in our country as well. Because obviously, if you're big enough to tour the world, then you're certainly touring and playing everywhere in the United States. And while you may want to discredit certain political opinions or celebrities that you don't agree with, I personally think that their beliefs and arguments tend to hold more weight than, as I said before, somebody who grew up in rural Arkansas, you know, somebody in my area, my neck of the woods in southern Michigan, that's scared to go to Detroit or scared to go to Cleveland or some of these other big cities because they either have never been or when they went, they saw things that they were uncomfortable with, such as, you know, urban blight, homeless people, and, you know, let's not forget that a lot of fucking people are racist. So they see large amounts of black people or minorities and are kind of instantly scared and insecure. So I always find that kind of funny because I was raised in a pretty damn racist household. I can recount almost nearly hearing nearly every racial slur you can possibly think of at some point in a conversation. And I wouldn't say I held those opinions too, but it was the kind of thing, you know, I live about an hour from Detroit. So me and my dad would go to a Tigers game on occasion, right? Detroit Tigers. And every time we got by Detroit, you would think we were in the fucking Secret Service, you know, watching out for the president. I mean, it would be lock the doors, don't look out your window, don't look at anybody. I recall one time I was holding, I think it was a $5 or $10 bill up to the window. I was a young kid, probably 7 or 8. And that was when I first discovered that they had a little strip and currency to determine if it's fake or not, determine if it's counterfeit. So I was having a conversation with my buddy, and I held it up to the window to show him the little strip, and my mom absolutely lost it. She, she, in so many words, told me, get that $5, $10, whatever it was, bill down. Somebody will shoot your ass for that, you know. And it's just kind of like, now I'm older, and I realize that there is fucking risk everywhere. If you really want to get down to it, there is risk everywhere. Sure, in Detroit, as opposed to the small town I live in, there may be more risk. But as I get older, I realize that there's more risk because there are more people. So, of course, there's going to be more robberies in Detroit than there is in my town. Or whatever your favorite crime may be, there's going to be more of it when there's a higher concentration of people. And in particular, a lot of people living in poverty. So I kind of grew up with this notion that Detroit was a scary, scary place to be feared. And when you realize that there are so many amazing things that happened in Detroit, and if you let fear consume you, you can't enjoy those things. I mean, I won't even touch on everything, but Detroit's a pretty fucking awesome city that really gets a bad rap. I mean, you got Motown, the Hitsville USA building, which is absolutely legendary in the music world. You've got the Detroit Institute of Arts, which has some of the greatest works that you will see outside of New York or LA in this country, Chicago. We have state-of-the-art sports ballparks. Whether it be Comerica Field, where the Detroit Tigers play, my personal favorite, Ford Field, where the Lions play, or even the new Little Caesars or Hot and Ready Arena, they're calling it, where the Pistons and Red Wings share. They're all right downtown, and this area, when I was a kid, Greek Town in the area downtown where these facilities are located was not necessarily a very good place to go. But a lot of people have not been to Detroit in that long that they fear going to those areas. And I mean, I've had buddies party down there for bachelor parties, things like that, until 3-4 in the morning, and it's about as safe as you can get in a big city. I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have a homeless guy come up to you and try to get some cash or something to that effect, which is happens in any big city. I mean, the city I live in is about 20,000 people, and there are still panhandlers within this city. So I think that's something you can't escape, and you can't really fear it. I used to fear it when I was younger, and I kind of learned to embrace it. And You know, I will go down certain days, and instead of giving money, sometimes I'll give money, but I'll talk to somebody first for 10, 20 minutes and make them feel like a human being, and then possibly give them some money. And I would rather somebody be completely honest with me and tell me they want to buy a couple beers and a meal than somebody with some fake sob story about being stranded with their kids and some of these intricacies. I want to say it was 2013. I was going to a Lions game on Thanksgiving, and we were walking towards the stadium. There was a guy, he had a military jacket on, and for some reason I recognized the stuff on his jacket. I'm not a big military guy. I don't know a ton about it. I know a difference between the branches. It's special ops, certain things like that. I can understand, and I can look at a jacket, but other than that, I can't really. So there was a guy, and he was a vet around my age, maybe a little younger, in his late 20s, you would say, maybe early 30s. And he had a sign, and stopped for a minute, and he asked for a cigarette. So I gave him a cigarette, and when he dry hit the cigarette, he could obviously smell weed because I had several joints in my cigarette pack. So, talking to this guy for a minute, and I asked him where he was stationed and things like that, and he was in Afghanistan and Iraq. After talking for a few minutes, I was like, man, you sound like you were right with my brother-in-law, where my brother-in-law was nearly killed in action. And he said, oh, yeah, well, what was his name? And I didn't want to get roped, so I said, his name's Jake. And then he responded with the last name out of absolutely nowhere, and I was kind of floored. It was kind of like, wow, you know, what are the friggin' odds? So I gave this guy $50 and a couple joints. I'm not trying to brag on myself, or I'm just simply kind of talking about how when you humanize someone, you kind of begin to peel back the layers of what you see externally. And you can, even if it's to make that person feel good for a day, you know, I hope it wasn't, but I think it was one of the best days that guy had had in a while, and that's just absolutely devastating. But again, it kind of goes back to the original point of this whole podcast, is you don't really understand what somebody experiences until you kind of touch it firsthand. So when celebrities go to, say, European nations, whether it be a Germany, a Denmark, they kind of, some of them even have houses over there, you know, and they kind of understand more about those people, their governments, their economic systems, than we do here, you know, and maybe rightly so, because a lot of people here have to work long hours. You know, they don't have a lot of chance to vacation, let alone research and to, you know, try and understand the point of views of some of these celebrities. One of the big stories that kind of broke today, and I mean, I guess this story's been building over a week, but unless you've been under a rock, you've heard the story about LeBron James going back to his hometown of Akron, opening up a school for at-risk kids. Seems to be a great program he's working on and things like, you know, making sure the kids have breakfast, lunch, snacks, all the school supplies paid for. And on top of that, the thing that I think is the absolute coolest about it, as he's instituting GED programs for these children's parents, he's invested a lot of time and money in this. I'm personally, when it comes to the basketball court, not a LeBron James fan at all. But as far as a man, a human being, he's a damn good, exceptional human being. And so he's done this. And for whatever reason, Donald Trump felt the need to essentially attack his intelligence on Twitter today. I don't have the exact tweet pulled up, but it's something to the effect of, you know, basically, Don Lemon interviewed LeBron on CNN last night. Don Lemon is as dumb as they come, and he's so dumb he made LeBron James look smart. Which just, I can't even begin to fathom the insecurity that a human being, not even the president, not even a billionaire, the insecurity that a human being must have to speak like that. For one, to talk bad about Don Lemon, who's an accomplished reporter, whether you like CNN or not, the man's damn good at his job, and he's clearly good at his job. He's been there for a long time. He's interviewed about anybody you can think of. And for the president to refer to this guy as dumb, Mr. Covief, Mr. Bowling Green Massacre, to not only refer to him as dumb, but to refer to LeBron James as dumb, under what grounds? You know, I get it. LeBron didn't go to college. He went to the NBA straight after high school. That still does not make somebody dumb. A college degree does not make somebody dumb or smart. Now, odds are that if somebody has a college degree, they will be smart, but that's certainly not the case. And I'm sure anybody listening knows a few people with college degrees who you kind of question those institutions that gave this person a degree. But nevertheless, he felt the need to attack LeBron, who is the ultimate, I wouldn't say ultimate humanitarian, but he's doing a lot of very good things for people that need things done to them. Meanwhile, Trump's been sued over his bogus bullshit university, where he was defrauding people and giving them bullshit degrees, and then has the nerve to attack LeBron. I just, with all of the problems in this country, with all the ways he can make America great again, that type of language is not going to make a fucking thing great. All it's going to do is further the divide. And a lot of the comments that I've seen from pro-Trump people were to the effect of, well, NFL players taking a knee, Trump, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what your thought process is to go from, Donald Trump said something really stupid, I should denounce it, I should say, hey, I voted for you, I like you, but this was a dumb thing to say. You know, go back to doing your job instead of tweeting jealous shit out at midnight like a high school girl. Go back and do your fucking job. But they don't. They enable him by deflecting by moving the goalposts, no pun intended. But what these people don't realize, and maybe they don't care, is that Donald Trump has hated the NFL for 30, 35, probably close to 40 years. He's tried to buy shares of teams or partner up with people who were going to buy a team. And the NFL owners were like, hell no. We're not going to approve this sale. Sorry. Because they don't want somebody like him in their sport. Because he is not going to make a franchise worth more money. If anything, he's going to... I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but he's going to make their value drop. Okay? When you got somebody who's such a loose cannon, nobody wants that person running their company. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. The only reason he's been successful is because he gets to run his own company. He has limitless amounts of money and then just files bankruptcy whenever things aren't going well. So he's not like the NFL. And again, this is all research you can do and look this up. You don't have to take my word for it. But in the early 80s, there was a league called the USFL, the United States Football League. There was a team called the New Jersey Generals. Trump purchased this team. And this was after, I believe, after he was denied the chance to own the Buffalo Bills. So all these owners, they understood that they were not competing with the NFL at that point. Their league was only a couple years old. They said, let's get this thing moving. They actually, if you look back, some of the players they had, I mean, Steve Young, Herschel Walker, Reggie White, Sam Mills, a great linebacker, Anthony Carter, a great wide receiver, a lot of guys that went on to have extensive and even Hall of Fame, Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame careers in some instances, they started in the USFL. So they had the league moving nicely. The quality of gameplay was really close to the NFL, but the majority of the owners were really smart and realized we can't compete with the NFL just yet. So they played their games in the spring. So Trump gets a wild hair up his ass for whatever reason, probably because he's mad at the Buffalo Bills, mad at the NFL, what have you. And convinces several of these owners that, hey, we need to go and fight to play in the fall. That's when the real football market is. That's when we'll really make the big bucks. And all these owners, not all these owners, most of them listened to him. They thought, well, this guy's got a ton of money. He's got to be right. So they were going to try, and Donald Trump decided to sue the NFL. Some frivolous lawsuit claiming that the NFL had a monopoly on fall football, which is just kind of hilarious in the first part, because high school football is played in the fall, college football is played in the fall. They're saying the NFL has a monopoly on professional football in the fall. So they go to court, and the jury actually is in favor of Trump, but for whatever reason, they awarded him $3. So that was the damages. So these guys didn't play their spring league that year in order to get to this lawsuit and won $3. So essentially, the league folded. Now, that may not be a big deal for someone like Donald Trump, who's got all daddy's money, but it is for these other guys that invested a great deal of what they had in this league. So the main point of that little rant, little story, was that he's had an axe to grind with the NFL for a long, long time. Even a couple years after that, he had the opportunity to buy the Dallas Cowboys. And I believe the price tag back then was $50 million. And he was on record, again, you can look this up, saying something like, well, whoever buys the Cowboys is really making a bad move. You know, there's no way they're going to be worth more money. They've won, and I don't think they're going to win much soon, so they're not going to be worth much money. When I believe the Cowboys are worth over, I think it was like $1.5 billion. So had he bought them for $50 million back in the 80s, they would be worth $1.5 billion today. And I don't have to do the math for you, but that's a fucking good investment. So anyway, he's been routinely laughed at by the NFL. So when Kaepernick started kneeling, he started this narrative that the NFL is losing money because of Kaepernick. The league is horrible. All these different things, basically to try and pat himself on the back to look like the good guy. When in reality, if you look at what happened with the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, by the end of the 2016 season, Kaepernick was about the only player kneeling. There was a nice little movement, if you will, throughout the season, but it kind of died down. Everybody had kind of went, okay, this kneeling business hasn't really gotten us much. So, you know, what's the point in really doing it? Voila, Trump becomes president. The 2017 season, which was last year, you had he and Pence both speaking out against the kneeling, against Kaepernick, who was not even on an NFL roster. Again, trying to claim that the ratings are declining because of the kneeling. You know, people aren't going to games because of the kneeling. And it may sound good. And a lot of his followers, a lot of people, period, will believe it. But that's not the case. When you look into the case, you will find that, well, okay, the way people watch games is much different than the way they used to. So that is why the ratings are going down. Because Nielsen only does people with antenna, cable, and satellite. And the Nielsen's, if I need to remind anybody, is simply a very good estimate. A guesstimate, if you will. Where they monitor so many people watching TV, find out which programs they watch, and then kind of do the math to figure out how many people are actually watching it. But now you have all these streaming services. You have any number of ways for people to watch the games. And on top of that, those who are my age, I'm 35, will remember that Monday Night Football used to be, you used to have to make the playoffs in order for your team to play the next season on Monday Night Football, or at least get really close. And the same with like the Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football. Those primetime games were always, you know, like today, it would be, you know, the Patriots and Eagles, the Falcons and Eagles, the Steelers, Patriots, Redskins, Cowboys. Those kind of games would be the marquee games of the week. So therefore, you had a lot more people tuning in. But it's not the case anymore. Because of revenue sharing and things like that, you get matchups on Thursday Night Football like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Indianapolis Colts. Which, if you're a Bucs or a Colts fan, you're going to watch. But if you're the average football fan, you might not even want to watch. I personally love the game and try to watch as many as I can. But a game like that is not a game I would set time aside for. So there are plenty, and the same with attendance going down at stadiums. they like to push this narrative that it's because of the players kneeling. When in reality, most stadiums have outpriced the average fan or the average family. So a lot of people would rather sit in their comfy house where they don't got to pay $8 to $12 a beer. They don't got to pay $15 for a hamburger. They would rather sit there in their house and watch the game, which is very understandable. But you have all these factors that are contributing to what some would deem as the decline. But very little of it has to do with Kaepernick and the kneeling business. Most of those people claiming that they're boycotting didn't watch football in the first damn place. I've seen it up and down my Facebook timeline. Never watch NFL again. And this person probably can't even name five fucking teams. Or no, you didn't watch them in the first place. You certainly didn't go to games. So they're not losing any revenue from you. And meanwhile, whenever the Super Bowl happens, the ratings are always sky high. So that's what tells you, when people need to watch the game, they will watch it. And the original concept of this podcast was celebrity opinions. And what I find, I don't know if you, it's not ironic, because I really fucking hate using that word. I guess maybe more the word I would use would be poetic. But you have to look at certain times. And back in his day, Muhammad Ali was considered a radical for his beliefs and his views. Which, same with Jim Brown, Bill Russell. A lot of those guys that spoke out back then were viewed as crazy. Kind of the same as John Lennon. Several others. And when you look at now what they were saying then, it seems very logical. But most people back then couldn't see it. And I feel that way now about a lot of celebrities, whether it be Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, Chris Long, Malcolm Jenkins. When you peel back the layers of what they are saying, and you actually do legit research, you talk to people that they're speaking about, you understand that they have a much better perspective than somebody who's lived in a Manhattan suite their entire life, their entire existence. Somebody that's grew up in the D.C. area their entire life with their parents or themselves as a politician, as a lobbyist, as a what have you. They understand more than the person who lives in rural Arkansas, rural Missouri, because they're speaking about what's happening from their perspective in their world. And their views deserve just as much attention, if not more attention, than the average person's views, simply based upon their experiences. I, for several years, had worked at a medical marijuana dispensary. And when I first took the job, I honestly thought it was kind of a ruse. I thought, hey, we're getting to legally sell weed. This is so fucking cool. You know, that sort of thing. And then I started to see certain people come in. The one person that comes to mind was a woman in her 40s with MS. And she would nearly stagger in, simply just unable to control her muscles and things like that. And she would come in she would take a hit. She would look through, make her selections, and by the time she got to the register, her twitching was gone. She was walking upright. And it kind of clicked on me then, like, holy shit, this is a medicine. You know, maybe it's a fun medicine, maybe it's a cool medicine, but it's a fucking medicine regardless. And I wish that that everyone could have seen that experience through my eyes. There's one more story, another guy who had some serious brain trauma from two auto accidents within a short span. He had never smoked, used marijuana in his entire life. He was probably around 60, late 50s. And he came in, and he was explaining to us he couldn't sleep. He would go sometimes almost a week without sleeping at a time. Very little appetite, all these different things. And when my boss, out of the goodness of his heart, gave this guy a few Simpson oil capsules. Basically capsules with Simpson oil, and which is a very highly concentrated THC. It's used a lot for severe pain and to treat cancer patients. Anywho, my boss gave this guy a few of these caps, and it's like, here, no charge. If these work for you, come back tomorrow and we'll talk. So this guy comes back the next day with tears in his eyes and explains that he got the first good night of sleep he had had in 7 years. Again, that's something that I wish everyone could see. Because then maybe they would get a little different perspective on the medical use of marijuana, on the medical use of cannabis. But it's those experiences that tend to form our opinions. And I feel like celebrities are no different. They see something and they can't forget it. And they can't let it go. Whether it's police violence, you know, whether it's poverty, whether it's hunger in some third world nation, they see something and it affects them, and they have to be outspoken about it. They have to talk about it. They have to make people aware of it. And I think instead of condemning them, we need to salute them, we need to listen, and we need to assist them.